Hello and welcome to episode 121 of the Building Sustainability Podcast. My name is Jeffrey Hart, and every fortnight join me as I talk to designers, builders, makers, dreamers and doers. Together, we can explore the wide world of sustainability in the built environment by talking to wonderful people who are doing excellent things. And today's wonderful person who is truly doing excellent things is Will Stanix. He is back for the second part of our chat. If you haven't heard episode 120, then I would suggest you start there. This is a continuation of the same. We finish off talking about some of the finer details of Will's barn conversion before talking about the types of projects that Will's taking on. And we finish by talking about Will's clay plaster product that should be on the market soon. You'll hear why that's contentious. This episode was recorded in November of last year. I'm going to keep this intro as quick as possible. Time to tell you about Clayfest. There are 4 days of workshops all about clay. That's clay plastering, clay floors, clay sculpture. It's going to be an incredible time. So there is teachers, including myself, teaching earthen floors. This week's guest, Will Stanix, is teaching, along with a whole host of other incredible folk. Quite a few of them who have featured on this podcast. On the final day, the Friday of that week, there is a one-day conference with loads of incredible speakers. So that is a whole week of clay-based shenanigans. There's a link in the show notes. Make sure you check it out. Get yourself some tickets, and I will see you there. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by heading to patreon.com/buildingsustainability. And for less than buying me a cup of coffee, you can support. Everyone does a little bit, and then all of the associated costs of this podcast are covered. In return, you get your name read out on the podcast, you get discounts on craft courses at Nettlecombe Craft School, you get advert-free listening, and you get a whole load of bonus content. This episode was actually going to be bonus content, but I decided it should be for the masses. New supporters this week, we have By Our Hands, We Make Our Way. Not sure of a name on that one, but thank you very much. We've got Brad. Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it. And then we've also got Trevor. And Trevor has supported at the superhero level. He's getting all of the benefits, as mentioned earlier, as well as a hand-carved wooden spoon carved by me. So yes, if you do want to support, head to patreon.com/buildingsustainability. There is a link in the show notes. If you don't want to support financially, then please do share this episode. Get it to as many people as you can. That is also incredibly helpful. Just mentioned spoons. I'm running 2 spoon carving workshops on May the 18th and July the 20th at the Nettlecombe Craft School. There's a link in the show notes for those. Hope to see you there. Hope to welcome you to my beautiful woodland. I think that's about it. I'm keeping it pretty short today. There are links in the show notes to some of the things we've talked about. And I should also just say that we talk about hemp insulation and cutting it. Since we recorded this podcast, I have used the insulation saw that we talk about, and it is fantastic. It cuts really well. I have my doubts, as you'll hear. Okay, that's about it. Enjoy William Stanix.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So the ceiling, I haven't told you about.
Ooh, tell me
the
about
roof insulation.
Yeah, I know what it is, but I'll act surprised. What's the roof insulation?
The roof insulation is sprayed hempcrete, but with clay, not lime.
Whoa!
Yeah.
No way!
Yeah. Boom, brain explosion.
I was just chatting to Jules about that yesterday, about how good that is as an option.
Yeah.
And how it's weirdly underused.
Well, you've got to do it in the right time of year, summer, for it to dry.
Yeah.
So it dried. So the south side dried in 2 weeks. There's 4 inches.
Yeah.
And the north side dried in like 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But that was in the summer. And then I tried to spray a bit on the wall. So when this was, at one point, this was all open. The walls were just the frame. There was no, you know, sides or anything. And I sprayed that end wall against the wood fibre, which is on the outside. And it was winter. It was kind of this sort of weather. And it just didn't dry. It was there for, it was just an experiment. And I was left it for like 10 weeks or more. And it literally didn't get any, I had fans on it. Didn't really change.
Right.
So it was like, yeah, this is a summer thing, or where you can somehow dry it.
Mm. I guess not having the wood fibre on the other side, like if you could shutter it and then remove the shuttering, then you could at least have air moving through it.
Yeah. Yeah, which is what I had with the roof.
Right.
Because I've got the old tile battens are left. They're on the other side of those rafters is the old tile battens.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to take them out because they were really wet. They're oak. They're really nice, solid, and they were really well nailed in. I thought, well, those rafters are only small, and if I pull them all out, they might damage those rafters. So I stapled cardboard on the underside of them and then sprayed the hempcrete at the cardboard from the top and then just peeled the cardboard off. It worked really well.
Nice.
And it went rock solid. Like, you could tap it and it sounded like hempcrete, you know, bang, bang, bang. Didn't sound soft at all.
I was going to ask you about that because I wondered if that was an indication that there might have been a little bit of lime left in your sprayer. And the reason I was thinking that is that I ordered a big old bag of, I think it was clay daub mix from, I'm not going to say the company name, and we plastered with it.
You're going to say me then?
No.
Oh my God, what are you going to say?
And it was absolute shit. And we were clay plastering with it, and it was like a course, and everyone wanted to use their hands. So I was like, yeah, use your hands. And then sort of at the end of, like, plastering with it, people were going like, my hands are really, like, their hands were really sore and, like, sucked all the moisture out. And so we went and, like, tested a bit of the daub, and it had a ever so slight, like, limey smell to it. Tested a bit by putting it in vinegar, and it, like, fizzed up. So it was obviously limey. And I think I complained, and they just said, oh, you know, we used the same mixer that we mix up our lime in. I wonder if, like, it was a ever so slightly lime stabilized thing. I wonder if that happened for you.
Well, I think two things. I think they might put lime in to stop it fermenting and being smelly.
Ah.
Because I noticed, what did I notice recently? Oh, yes, I made a mortar for these steps, the same way I make all my mortars. It was like clay clay and straw and sand, no particular ratio, probably 50-50-50.
Yep.
1-1-1.
If it works.
Or sometimes it's 2 sand, 1 clay, or 2.5 sand, 1 clay. But quite rich with the mortars, because it doesn't really matter if they crack. And they don't tend to, because you squash them together. But I was bunging in all my, like, I got tubs of all sorts of stuff out there, so I was bunging it. I mainly put my clay and my sand in, then I put all my leftover tubs, and one of which was lime mortar, one tub of lime mortar in quite a large mix.
Mm.
And it sat there for ages in here. I have the heating on at night to, you know, because just to keep it warm. And it didn't ferment at all. Not one bit. Whereas all the other stuff, the plaster that I've been making, proper fermented, like stinky, stinky, stinky. And so it must be that little bit of lime. And so that makes me think they might put a bit in on purpose to stop it fermenting so people don't complain about it smelling when they get it.
Yeah.
But it could be, like you say, from the machinery. But the sprayer, I don't think it wouldn't have been enough. Even if there was a bit of lime in there, the amount I've sprayed on the roof, it would have gone it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because it's all running through the machine.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's lime stabilised.
Okay, so it just goes solid because clay is great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tried quite a few different mixes. I used a really dark grey clay that's from Oxfordshire that just I happened to get from H.G. Matthews, which they don't actually keep it as a product. It's just they had some of this dark grey clay because they were making roof tiles out of it.
I've used that stuff. Oh, bloody great.
Oh. Same sort of area as the Witchert, but a lot darker.
Mm.
I used the Witchert clay. I used some clay I bought and some clay I bought from a pottery place. Just a white powdered clay, not the really white stuff, but slightly grey. And I used all those three. Some of them I put chalk in, chalk powder as well. Some I didn't. So I was hoping to be like, oh, this is way better if you do this, or this is way better. And they were just all brilliant. So I was like, oh, I was like, well, at least it all worked. But yeah. I was hoping to be like, oh, you must use this, or you must do three of this and one chalk, or
doesn't matter what you do.
I mean, the ratio was all, I'd kept the ratio the same because it helps with the consistency of spraying. And I would know, I knew then the density to know that it's insulating. It's about 3:1, three by volume, 3 hemp, 1 clay, or 3.5:1. But it went solid in a way that it doesn't when you make a block of it by hand. I think when you're spraying it, you've got all this clay slip that doesn't really, it coats the hemp in a way that it doesn't when you're casting.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, really solid.
Because you've talked before about spraying hemp being, you get a different result from spraying hemp than you do from casting.
Yeah, massively. Well, not massively, but yeah, noticeably. There's
something that's happening in that spraying process that's making it different.
Yeah, it's the way that it mixes in the air. You've got a clay slip, or in hempcrete, the lime slip coming out of a hose and being sprayed under compressed air at the dry hemp that's moving out through the air. So the dry hemp's coming out of a hose in a stream, like a 3-inch wide hose.
Yeah.
And then at that stream of hemp is being sprayed the slip. And so it kind of coats around the outside of the hemp, and then it sticks, you know, it sticks to the wall or sticks to whatever you're spraying it at. But differently to casting. In casting, you've got it in a mixer and it's the hemp's like saturated with water. And it's almost like the water and the binder are kind of separate in the mixer because you've got a lot more, feels like you've got a lot more water. Whereas when you're spraying it, the water and the binder have been mixing the drum for a good 20, 30 minutes before it's gone down the tubes.
Yeah.
And it's like it's like one thing. It's not binder and water.
That hemp is like thirsty as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So when you've got it in a mixer and the hemp's completely saturated with water, it tends to take longer to dry as well. Whereas when you're spraying it, you've got dry hemp that just before it hits the wall, it's being coated in this slip. But the slip, the water's not really soaking into the hemp as much because the binder, the clay or the lime, whatever you're using, has kind of grabbed it already.
Mm.
So they do, yeah. And if you sprayed a load of sprayed hempcrete in a bucket, you couldn't then pick that up and cast it. It just doesn't work. It's really strange.
I don't quite understand.
Yeah, that. It's really strange. It feels completely different. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you used exactly the same ratios. You even use the same amount of water. So you'd think it'd be the same, but I think a lot of the water is lost in spraying, when you spray at the air, you get a lot of moisture in the air.
Like mist.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think a lot of it is lost in the actual spray at the end of the nozzle.
Mm.
But yeah, that I'd wanted that for ages, that's the clay and the hemp. And I'm so pleased it works.
Yeah.
There's a video of it actually on my website.
Go on, give it the plug.
You're allowed to say things like that. That's thathempcreekguy.co.uk or .com. And there's also, and it's on the YouTube one. I don't know what the YouTube one's called. I think it's just called William Stanix.
Yeah, I'll put a link to the
Natural Building
notes.
With William Stanix, maybe.
Oh, nice.
I can't remember. But it's on. But it's on there. And so one of the tricks for drying it, though, was... So the north side, I needed to do a little bit of force drying. I got a bouncy castle pump.
Nice.
And then you get a bolt bag which has a chute on the bottom,
mm-hmm.
one of those ones that comes with a chute, and tie the chute around the bouncy castle pump. And then I stapled the bolt bag on the rafters and just blew air at it for, like, you know, I don't know, 4 hours or something, and it would just dry that section.
Nice.
And they're so powerful, those bouncy castle pumps.
I was looking into those for drying floors.
Mm.
I ended up getting a load, same sort of size as your ones over there.
The DeWalt ones?
Didn't get the DeWalt ones. Actually, Jamie got them all for me.
Did it?
You know how he loves Facebook Marketplace?
Yeah. He gets all the bargains. He does drive, like, most of the way across the country for them.
Yeah.
But
it's still a bargain.
Yeah.
No, he found a guy selling, like, 20 of them.
Whoa.
I think I got 5.
They're so good, aren't they?
Yeah, they're so loud. We set one up in a residential property. Thank goodness it was a detached house. Turned all the fans on at the end of the night, shut all the doors, walked away, and we were like, getting in the car, like, wow, you can really still hear that.
Whoa. Yeah. Then mine aren't that noisy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mine are probably better then.
Yeah, probably more powerful.
Yeah.
You know? But the other thing they're really good for, trick that Graham Durrant, who sprays hempcrete.
Yep.
Hemplimespray.co.uk.
Nice.
So if you're doing something dusty, you just open a window and a door, or a window, whatever, and you suck air in one and blow air out the other with the fans, or just blow air out of one and it will pull the air through itself. And it just, you don't even need to, I mean, you should wear a mask, obviously, but it's so much nicer than putting loads of masks on and having dust everywhere. It just blows it straight out the building.
Yeah, you're just creating, like, active pressure, aren't you?
Yeah. Brilliant.
Real smart.
Yeah.
Top tips, building with Will Stanix.
Well, that's Graham's tip.
Did you do any kind of wood fibre thermal bridge stopping over the top of the hempcrete?
Cork.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, cork board.
How thick was that?
There's 100 mil of hemp clay, and I think there's 100 mil of cork.
Nice.
In 250 mil layers, so, because they're not tongue and grooved.
Yeah.
The reason I went for cork, because as you can see, these rafters aren't massive, and I was worried about the weight on the roof, because the purlins at one end are rotted and only just bearing on the trusses.
Right.
And I didn't want to do some fancy repair. I just wanted to make do with what I've got. And the cork board is the least dense, the least weighty per thickness mm-hmm. that you can get.
Yeah.
So the tongue and groove board's arguably... not better, but it's got the tongue and groove, so you kind of feel like you're getting better air tightness.
Mm.
So I went for the 250 mil boards overlapped.
And staggered the joints.
Staggered the joints. And then I could still get the lovely curve of the roof as well, which I thought I'd probably lose with wood fibre board. So I kept there's a bit of a dip above this door.
That's window, nice, sorry. That annoys me when, like, an old building gets like a dead flat roof on it.
Yeah. Why? That's the best. I mean, there is a square right next to me, but doing this building, you don't need a level, you don't need a square. It's, if it looks right to your eye, it's right. So it goes the hemp and then the cork. And within the hemp, there are 2x2 battens, which set the depth and for the cork to connect to. And then over the cork, screwed 2x1 counter battens going up the roof.
Yeah.
And between the cork and those counter battens, there is the breathable membrane.
Yeah.
The blue one from Eco Merchant. And then on top of the counter batten, there is the tiling batten.
Yeah.
And then when I took the roof apart, I took loads of photos of the details of the tiles.
Mm.
And then I just copied them. And, oh, man, doing roofing is so much fun.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, it's, well, obviously, you do it in the summer.
Yeah.
But you're up there. It's the blue sky. You feel like you can see for miles around. It's, I mean, I'm not a roofer, but this is quite a simple roof. It's up and over. Mm. There's no, I didn't
no put any, hips or anything.
No hips, no valleys. There's no skylights because I didn't want to cut any of these lovely old rafters. No dormers because I thought I just wanted it to be a barn shape. It's really nice because you've got your, so on that side, it's all original clay. It's all the original. I mean, they're not original, but they're all the clay tiles I took off the roof.
Yeah.
And as I took them off, you can see there's, I've got like 20 of these really old ones with square peg holes.
Ooh.
And then quite a lot of these ones with round peg holes, which are the predominant ones. Which, so it must have had this original old roof, and then this next roof has been repaired. And then there's a few like newer ones, but still really old peg tiles thrown in. Although, obviously, it could have just been that predominant tile with the round peg holes. It could have just been that when they built the barn, they had a few 20-odd old, really old ones left and put them in. You never know.
Yeah.
But and some of them still had the wooden pegs in.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I've kept some wooden pegs and put them in a frame on the on the wall. But, yeah, doing the roof, when you're doing the roofing, it's not that difficult. You know, you've got to obviously stagger the joints.
Yeah.
And so you have to pick and choose your tiles sometimes.
Are they different sizes?
Yeah. It's quite a lot. And on that side of the roof, I had to buy loads of old reclaimed ones. So there's loads of different sizes. So you kind of have to, each batch, say you've got five batches, you've got to take two from each tile, each batch, take it on the roof, put it in a pile. Yeah. So you know you're getting a spread. But yeah, it's lovely. Nice. And I've got lime mortared, what they called verge at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Clay tile undercloak, which is the bit you see as you look up.
Yeah.
And then the lime mortared verge. Lime mortared ridge tiles. And guess what? The lime mortar hasn't cracked. It's like, you know, you see the verges on with cement and it's always cracked.
Yeah.
Lime, it hasn't cracked yet. Hopefully it won't.
Yeah. Bless. Yeah, you know everyone's going to be looking at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Years down the line it cracks, you'll be gutted.
Yeah. But that's a lovely job doing those tiles.
Yeah. Oh, it's a lovely job you've done all round. There's so much care and, yeah, obvious time and attention put into it.
Yeah, probably too much time in some places.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to do it. I really wanted to be, not kind of make do, but just not overcomplicate things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the floor is boards, you know, I haven't tongue and grooved them. I think, well, hopefully they're not going to,
pull
up. You know, it's just not complicating things too much, making it raw, because it was a working building and I don't want to lose that kind of, I guess the word's raw or rough and ready kind of look or style. So it's got to be, you know, I like things to be neat, but I don't mind seeing nails and stuff like that.
So it's honest.
That's the word.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What's your favourite bit?
I think my favourite bit is the feeling you get when you come in here.
Yeah.
And it's not like everybody who comes in here for the first time says, oh, my God, this feels amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could be people who, obviously, people who are into natural building might say that anyway. But I mean, I've had people in here who aren't coming in here to necessarily see the barn. I might be bringing them in. I might have stored something in here and they come in to take it back off me or something. And they might just be here to grab something off me and they'll come in and go, oh, it smells so nice in here. It feels so nice in here. And the people I haven't slept in here yet, but the people who have stayed in here are always like, oh, I'll get such a good night's sleep. It's so lovely in there. So, yeah, I think that's my favourite thing, just the ambiance, I guess.
Mm. Mm. I wonder how much of that is the acoustics, like the instant.
I think that's got a lot to do with it, and the smell.
Mm.
I mean, at the moment it smells of the cedar floor, but when that wasn't, when I wasn't doing that, it was the smell of the hemp.
Yeah.
It's quite sweet. when it wasn't that, it was the smell of the clay, like earthy, you know, when the stairs are drying, you know, that kind of wet earth smell you get when it rains on a summer's evening, kind of, got, once the fermented smell went, I didn't let anyone in that period. Once that went, you got that lovely sort of damp earth smell.
Mm.
And so you've got the smell and you've got the acoustic, and then visually it's really interesting with all the timber.
Yes. Yeah, having, like, you can tell those bits of timber are trees.
Yeah, like, there's bits of bark in still in places.
And there's all the little knots and stuff from the softwood. It definitely... It's a biophilic dream, Will.
If I knew what that meant.
That's there's a great podcast on that.
There is.
Yeah. No, it's like the good feelings you get from being in nature. And then, like, how we biophilic design is about bringing that in, like, bringing it into your space.
Was that a recent one?
It's been like a buzzword of...
No, was that a recent podcast?
Was
that a whole podcast about that?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to go back to that.
Mm, you should. It's great.
Yeah.
Buildingsustainability.com.
You beat me to it. But one, I did want to, one tip, not tip, but like, so you've got all the rafters that are like quite close. They're like a foot apart or something.
Yeah.
And you know, like loads of people, or mostly you see that lime plaster between, bright white lime plaster between them. But I think, I didn't purposely do this. I just wanted that red colour on the ceiling. But I think having a more muted colour between the rafters really allows you to see the timber. So when you have that white, it's just such a contrast between the white and the timber.
That's interesting, yeah.
When it's not white, you kind of see the timber a lot more.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
Yeah, but I don't think I've ever seen one with the timbers like this. With a, well, where I got kind of the inspiration from was a picture or post that Becky Little did.
Right.
Where she'd done a red ceiling in a quite timber-filled room. I think it was a paint, but...
Yeah.
I just loved that red with the timber.
Feels quite... what is it? It's... I don't know. It's so warm and, like, delicious. But there's something a bit foody about it.
Really?
Maybe it's...
What, like, you want to eat it?
Maybe I'm just hungry. Know, like the timbers look super, like the colour really comes out of those as well.
What, because of the colour next to it? Or just
I think so, yeah. I think you're right, though, about, like, a photographer would call that dynamic range, that, like, you know, not having something bright.
Yeah.
Too bright means you can't really pick up the other bits.
Yeah.
Like when you have a photo and it's like you're trying to pick,
like,
do I want the this white... bit to be well exposed or this bit?
Yeah. And I did, like, when I've worked on loads of buildings where they've got timbers, old timbers close together like that, infill buildings. And I didn't realise that was what I was, you know, I was looking at it thinking, there's something I don't like about this. And actually, Emma was working on one with me where I was using like a Farrow and Ball paint, I think, and she had a tub of clay paint in the car and got it out and painted over. And you could instantly, there was less reflection.
Mm.
From the white, and you could see the shape of the infill and you see the timbers. And then I think having the darker colour takes that one step further, and you can just see it. Because of those ones where you've got bright white and timber, they're obviously beautiful, but I was always like, I don't know, I can't quite see, I don't know, something not quite right. And then now looking at this with the darker plaster, that's what I think I was worrying about, was the white. Or not liking was the bright white next to the timbers.
Yeah, well, I didn't expect to get interior design tips today.
Yeah, especially from me.
what's next?
So I'm putting the floor down before I've plastered most of the place. I mean, I've plastered some parts of it, but that's mainly because I want to get this floor out of the way.
Yeah.
Because it's been sat in here in the way for so long.
And there are some pretty chunky piles of stuff.
Yeah. So it's get the floor down, then make the treads for the stairs, so use up all the floor, and then if there's any of it left, maybe floor one of the bedrooms.
What's the floor up there at the minute?
It's just plywood on top of the... So they're new floor joists with plywood. So once all that timber's out of the way, I want to try and finish the building work, which is very little left. It's the ceiling to my left, your right.
Yeah.
Which is same as the one opposite, which is lath and plaster.
Nice.
So the laths are made from the leftover of my cladding.
Oh,
running
nice.
Through the table saw 38
nice.
I want to say 11 no maybe they're 15 mil boards thick boards, and I've cut them at 38 mil wide, and I spaced them at 10 mil and it worked perfectly. So
brilliant.
Put that ceiling up, finish the electrics in that ceiling. There's a cupboard going opposite this cupboard for the electrics, so build that cupboard. That's the last cupboard.
That area then becomes like a sitting area.
Yeah, like you go between the two cupboards, and it's like a little snug living area.
Ooh.
We're in the dining room, which I suppose is entrance and dining room. So there'll be a table between the two staircases here, and obviously you need a step to get out over there with a shoe rack.
Mm-hmm.
Get the building work out of the way, and then the floor will be down. So then it's like, there's the kitchen and bathroom to do. But what I think I'll do is plaster a wall, do a bit of kitchen, plaster a wall, do a bit of bathroom. Because I'm a bit concerned if I plaster everything, it'll be so wet in here that the timbers will start taking all that moisture up. So I'm going to try and spread out the plastering.
That's a good plan. Yeah, I've definitely done that in straw bale builds where we put all the lovely windowsills in.
Oh, yeah.
And then plastered the whole lot and they've all cupped and swelled.
Talking of window boards, which aren't in yet, but you like my window head board detail?
Very nice.
Oh, isn't it?
With the bark still on?
Yeah. So it's basically like an upside down... No, it's like a windowsill at the top of the window.
Yeah.
And I just like it as like a plaster stop.
Mm-hmm.
And it just looks nice.
It does. Mm. Looks really nice.
And then, so what is it after that? So once the kitchen and the bathroom are done, there's the floors upstairs to do, and finish the plastering. I might do earth floors up there.
Ooh, yeah. You definitely should.
Yeah.
Everyone should do earth floors.
Yeah. Because I don't think I've got enough timber to do both the bedrooms.
Yeah.
The bathroom will be tiled. The kitchen will probably have a clay tiled floor.
Mm-hmm.
Just so I don't have to worry. But then I thought on that bedroom I might cut the little clay blocks, the H.G. Matthews orange darky ones, mm-hmm. as a floor, or do like a plastered clay floor a la Jeffrey Hart.
Yeah.
But it's that floor up there is quite solid because it's got this internal wall underneath it, so there's no bounce in it.
Yes, that's the only thing with suspended timber floors is just making sure there's no deflection.
But what would I do on the plywood that's up there to get the clay?
What, to get it on there?
Well, the clay's not going to stick to the plywood, is it?
When we've done floors on the first floor, it was on that like tongue and groove deck board
thing. Oh, yeah. Straight on it.
Yeah, we got some mix and like rubbed it around just to scratch the surface and then went straight on. And it's fine.
It's fine. Oh,
it's fine.
Because
clay slip first if you...
I was thinking you'd need some sort of gritty primer, or even I was thinking of like getting some tile adhesive and notching it on with a notched trowel, but it sounds like I'm going a bit too far.
I mean, you could do.
But if you've done it without that, then...
Yeah.
I don't need to.
James Henderson would probably say to do the notch trial, wouldn't he?
I'm going to ask him.
He loves a bit of tile adhesive and then plastering onto that.
He loves a notch trial.
Mm. No, well, I had no problem going straight onto it.
Oh.
I mean, it's a big old heavy weight that's all, like it lays flat on the thing.
It's not like it wants to curl up.
No, and the mix is quite weak.
Yeah.
So it's, the clay doesn't curl it up. And you've always got gravity on your side.
Yeah.
Well, if you haven't, then something's gone really wrong.
You've got a wonky floor.
Or just the world's upside down. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't think, I mean, I keep saying, I've been saying it for years, but I don't think I'm that far off now. But I'm literally doing, like, literally after dinner,
yeah,
you know, I've got two projects on in the village, which is lovely, because yeah, now I'm getting loads done in the evenings here.
No, then, commuting time.
No, like, what, that house over the road is one of them.
Nice.
But obviously you've got to spread yourself between that and family time and walking the dog and stuff.
Yeah. The little dog doesn't need much walking, though.
No, no, no. She does. I don't walk the little dog. Not because I don't think it's cool, because I think it is cool. Because she won't walk with me. She runs home.
Oh.
Well, she looks like she's going to run home all the time.
Yeah.
And we had a little Jack Russell that used to run home when I walked her, so I'm a bit, yeah, I walk the big dog.
Fair enough. So hurt your feelings?
What, that the dog wants to run out? Yeah. No.
No, no, I don't care.
She can run home if she wants.
Yeah. What the? You're taking on bigger projects now again.
Yeah.
That's a sort of change, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was doing... Well, mainly because they came up in this village.
Right.
Because I used to do big projects and they were all over the place, and then just the commuting when you had small kids wasn't a nice idea. So then I switched to doing, go off and do a bit of hempcrete for a week, come back, go off and do a bit of plastering for a week, come back. And now, recently, there's been loads of projects around here. I mean, I used to travel 1.5 hours at least, or 1 hour sometimes to Oxfordshire. Now I've had one in Bedman, which is like 20 minutes away, and then Wigington, which is the other side of the brickworks, which is like 10 minutes.
Are these people that just found you, or are these people that you've convinced them, or it's your influence that
they're doing? They just found me, yeah. Right. Yeah, or I think the Wigington one, they might have been recommended by the architect.
Yeah.
The Bedmond one, he just found me, I think.
And there's sort of natural, what level of natural build are they?
The one in Wigington was basically the plaster and clay plaster onto cork board.
Okay.
But it was all timber frame, handmade bricks. The one in Wigington was apart from what's in the ground, it's timber frame. I've only done the hempcrete and the plastering.
Mm.
They've done an earth block floor.
Nice.
They've done, it's timber frame. It's local oak cladding, but it's from their woods. But is it called cleft, where you do a whole long piece of oak?
Yeah.
And then they're like in, what's that, 3 foot lengths?
Oh,
in
yeah.
Bands along the building. It's like an Eastern European traditional thing.
Okay. Well, cleaving is sort of splitting a log lengthways.
Yeah. So I think it's called cleft oak cladding or something. It's not something we do here, but it's a traditional thing elsewhere. The one up the road is not... But they're just friends from school, really, the kids' school. They want a building. It's a big extension, and they wanted to do... It's quite an interesting brief, because they wanted to do the best they can with the money they've got.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, I don't use polystyrene, I don't use Sellotex, don't use rock wall. You know, I'm happy to put concrete in the ground. So it's timber frame. It's brick clad because of the planning, because of the area, but it's H.G. Matthews handmade. Lovely wood-fired bricks. They're not wood fired because they're too expensive. And then timber frame filled with obviously a vented gap between the frame and the brick. The timber frame is going to have hemp fiber insulation, which is from the Hemp Block Company, made by IndiTherm.
Nice.
Supplied by the Hemp Block Company.co.uk.
I've been using a lot of IndiTherm recently.
Yeah,
it's lovely.
Really
quite
nice
annoying
stuff.
To cut. Is my only.
Have you got one of the knives?
The Excalibur bread knife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
I've only just got that. So.
So I tested. We haven't put it in yet, but I cut it. I got a piece of the IndiTherm and one of those Excalibur. But it was so good, it's called Excalibur now. Thank you. And I cut like a couple of sections really easily. Yeah. So I thought, because I did want to test that before I bought it all.
Yeah. Well, I tried circular saw and it all just jams up. And then I tried the alligator saw. And that was quite good. But yeah.
Oh, alligator saw.
Yeah. It was a bit... For getting a nice straight cut, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I did a whole project with it. And then, I went to see the guys at Kind and they were like, this is what you need.
Yeah.
So I'm starting the next job next week with that.
I reckon you need a few, though. I reckon the hem might blunt it. I don't know because we haven't started doing it yet, but I reckon it will blunt it at some point.
Mm.
So we're going to get a couple or more than a couple.
I mean, you must be able to sharpen them.
Funny old saying.
Like stainless steel, aren't
they? Mm. And then we've got hemp fibre insulation in the roof, reclaimed clay tiled roof.
Nice.
And then the ground floor insulation is the it's the Glaypor, but it's not Glaypor, it's the other one.
Geocell?
Not Geocell, it might be Technopore.
Yeah.
They're
all the same thing.
Yeah. We're going to do an earth block floor there because actually that's cheaper than doing a cement screed and a whatever normal people put on their floor.
Normal people.
And it looks lovely. The clients look seen it and they like it. Mm-hmm. So inside the frame, there's another layer of 40 mil insulation.
Yeah.
Going on the other way to stop the cold bridging. And then there's no hempcrete, but there's the hemp fibre insulation. But it's probably going to end up being plasterboard and plastered gypsum, which I don't have a massive problem with putting in because it suits their budget. If we paint it with non-toxic paints, you know, the brief is they want to do the best they can with the money they got, you know, so I can't, sometimes you can't do lots of, I mean, hopefully I'll sneak some clay plaster in. They got the 4 kids, so I might, you know, do a pink one for one of the girls or blue if she wants blue. It's harder though. I'm trying to persuade her to do pink because it's a lot easier to make them do.
Oh, I see.
There's 4 girls. It's like, you like pink, don't you, Amy? I hate pink. Oh, okay. I can't really forget the name. Martha, you like pink? No. Miriam, pink? No. Rachel, do you like pink? Oh, yeah, pink's all right. Right, pink room for Rachel. And then the house over the road obviously he's a friend, neighbour, and it's a lovely old house. I've been wanting to get my hands on that for a very long time. Really have. I just love working on old houses. But there's kind of, so he's into, you know, he likes his natural history and the environment, and it's not like he's come and gone, oh my God, I want, you know, he's new to all this.
Yeah.
He's just seen what I've done and it's like, yeah, that seems responsible. But again, it's like, we're not going to go ridiculous. The old part of the house is going to be lime or maybe some clay if it's, you know, whatever we think goes best on there.
Yeah.
And then there's a new extension, which is timber frame, hemp block and hemp fibre. So the hemp blocks go on the inside of the frame, hemp fibre in the middle, and then it's wood fibre board with render on the outside, lime render.
Nice.
Old clay tile roof, reclaimed clay tile roof. And then there's an extension out the back, which is a bit not really my kind of thing because it's like steels and corner opening bifold. He won't mind me saying this. He probably won't even listen.
How dare you?
I'm going to make sure he doesn't. Like opening bifold. So there's a lot of steel in the back. But, you know, to make that, it is a funny little house. So to make it, I guess, more livable, you can excuse it in some ways.
Right.
He's gone for timber beams wherever you can.
Yeah.
But in some places the engineers were like, no, it's steel or nothing. So it's a bit disappointing, but it will make a fantastic house. And he is putting the front, it's actually a flint cottage.
Oh, right.
And it's got like an inch of cement render all over it.
Oh, no.
So it's going to take a lot of time and money and effort to get all that off and get the flint back and get it all looking nice and working properly. So he is putting, the sort of trade-off is that I want that open plan with that bit of steel there, but I will put the front back to looking nice and old and vapor open how it should be. So, you know, I don't mind doing that.
Yeah. That's nice. I mean, it's good, isn't it? It's like the more the more people see this stuff, you know, your average person, your neighbour, person you meet on the street, whatever, there really is a demand for it, and there's an appetite, and people want to do the right thing.
Yeah.
It's just so many people must be building not knowing what the right thing is.
Oh, yeah. And they don't know there's another option, or it's the most expensive option because they don't know the right people. But there's way more of it than there used to be, like massively.
Well, the fact that you're working locally is...
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. Because, it certainly... I mean, I've stopped travelling for jobs other than floors, but, yeah, you just... It was part of the job,
Yeah, you had to accept it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think doing the main contract again kind of... There's one why I did it, but you can kind of manipulate it a bit. Because if they want you, if you're a builder and they want you to build the house as the main contractor, you know, and you say, well, I don't use polystyrene, so you're going to have to, we're going to have to change that, whatever it is. And then it's like, well, why don't you use polystyrene? You tell them all that, you can't really argue with a lot of the reasons. And a lot of the stuff now isn't a more expensive option. Like the wood fibre is a pretty good option. And the foam glass in the floor is as far as I can see, it's cheaper than doing it any other way.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's not that expensive, and it's so, if you think about the labour,
it's quick to chuck a load of bags down, isn't it?
So quick. And then the quality, if you think about like a normal floor, I guess they're putting like polystyrene slabs in the floor. If you did like a, you'd have like hardcore whack down, then you'd have oversight concrete, then you'd have polystyrene on top of that, and then you'd have a concrete screed on top of that. You know, you've got that concrete, then you've got the polystyrene, then you've got the concrete, and the polystyrene you've got to try and get flat and pushed up to each other with no gaps, which is pretty difficult. Whereas you just chuck in a load of glay pour straight onto the hardcore.
Don't have any seams to join.
No, you rake it out, compact it. So I think that is a cheaper option. You can do a cement screed on it if you wanted to. I don't suppose there's that much difference in it in embodied energy as an HL5 limecrete screw.
I would say they're pretty much the same.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be expensive. That doesn't have to necessarily be expensive. Or like what we're doing with the earth blocks, we're going straight onto the glay pour. And what I've done here with the hemp blocks, just compact the glay pour and lay a thick block straight on it.
So like a layer of... what are you putting down mortar-wise?
I think I'll lay it on lime mortar, but with clay mortar between them.
Yep.
And we're going to do like a herringbone pattern over there. Yeah. So it'll be, you know, you'd normally have a 75mm cement screed or like a 100mm limecrete screed. And so we're doing the blocks on edge, so there'll be 100mm in a herringbone pattern. And the house has got, the original house that the extension's going on the side of has got herringbone timber.
Yep.
Whatever you call it, like oak.
Parquet, type?
That's it.
Yeah.
So, and the colour of the H.T. Matthews stroquettes, the little ones are called, it's a very similar colour once you oil it.
Wow.
So,
oh, nice.
It should look pretty good.
That sounds great.
But yeah, straight on, so you put some lime mortar down and you're going straight on that, and as you're putting it down, you put clay mortar between them. Which is quite a fine clay mortar because you don't want any big stones. So, and I just use like a fine building sand and clay with the H.T. Matthews orange powdered clay.
Yeah.
Either one, probably 2-1. Two part sand, one part clay. I think I've done 1-1. No, 2-1. 2-1. 1-1's too rich.
Yeah.
And it gets really thin, the really thin joints. Looks really nice.
Ooh, I might just jump ship, not do poured earth floors anymore. They're a lot of hassle.
Yeah, well, I've done one with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I don't know, there's a certain aesthetic to them that is amazing. Like, I mean, the only reason I'm not doing it, I guess the block thing is quite cost effective and it's instant.
Yes.
But the aesthetic of a poured one is pretty cool, isn't it?
It is nice.
Yeah. You do both, mate.
Well, yeah.
And the other one is tiles. So we've got them to cut the big strokes.
Yeah.
The big cob blocks into 25mm tiles.
Who's doing that?
So where did I do that? I did a sample of it. My friend saw it, Bob.
Yeah.
Bob Blaw, hempsheds.co.uk. He lives in London anyway, and he was doing one or two rooms in a flat, or two flats or something. So they're already concrete floor, taking the floors up.
Mm.
Then clay and sand, 2-to-1, notch trowel straight onto the concrete. Then these little tiles, effectively, which are cut up cob blocks, onto that. And then he sanded it, I think, and then oiled it. And it looks really nice.
Mm.
Yeah.
Who's doing the cutting of the blocks?
Oh, A.T. Matthews.
Oh, really?
They have a cutting department. Yeah, so they have a cut where they cut brick slips for all sorts of things. Oh, of
course they do, yeah.
Yeah, but they hate doing it. Yeah, because it's so dusty. And they can't use the wet saws. Normally you use a wet saw for a really dusty thing. Course. But you can't with a cob block, can you? You won't have any blocks left.
And, yeah, I suppose if they're doing wet cutting, they don't need extraction. So they're not set up for a dusty thing.
Oh, no, they do have some saws for the dusty stuff. They do have these huge dust extraction things, yeah. But they still don't like it because it is a lot dustier than... bricks are pretty dusty.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you could equally buy the cob blocks and you can hire those saws from higher places.
Yeah.
They're just like... They look like a wooden... Like a chop saw for wood, but they're for bricks and stones.
Yeah.
Oh, they must have some fancy name, but...
The equivalent of like a... you get the steel saw for...
Yeah.
But mounted,
yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Mmm. That's an interesting option.
Yeah, and then you see all the straw and the flint and stuff. It looks really nice. But you can't get away from the fact that it's tiled. That's the only...
Yeah.
And you do have to either do herringbone or stretcher bond or stack bond or...
Yeah.
But it is instant and they are really tough.
I mean, the instant thing's always the drawback with the earth floors. Like, it's quite a hard thing for people to go like, oh, so I can't walk on my floor for 3 weeks.
Mm.
It's like, not even, you know, you can't even walk across it.
And to try and fit that into a project program where at the end everything's probably got squeezed anyway.
Yes.
That's the thing with plastering as well. Mm-hmm. Everything's been squeezed anyway. So.
Yeah, and the clients are like, desperation, I just want to live in my house, yeah. Stage. Been living with the in-laws for for 3 years already, yeah. And can't stand it. So, yeah, it is a hard sell. So that's a really interesting...
Mm-hmm. Don't do what me and Bob did, where we thought... Because obviously they don't cut them... When they cut them, they're not all absolutely identical thickness.
Mm.
And so we thought, oh, well, we'll just put them down, like squish them right down to the concrete because that's flat. Or the screed, and then we'll just sand off any undulations on top, which you can do because they will sand. I wasn't there for the sanding bit, but Bob said that it wasn't much fun. It was like it'd have been way easier if we'd have just pushed them down until they were all level and right. Just done minimal sanding.
What way not fun? Dusty?
Dusty, and I think the thing is the sanding... So I think I lent him my belt sander, or maybe he had his own belt sander. But you've got the soft clay, and then you've got bits of flint in there as well.
Mm.
So every so often, it will just rip the belt. Oh, and so you go through loads of belts.
Yeah.
And then there's the dust aspect of it as well, which isn't much fun.
Can you use a big floor buffer?
Yeah, I don't see why not. Yeah.
I mean, I use the big floor buffer on a floor as the last thing, just to... Give it
We were taking off like maybe 5 mil protrude. If you said there was 5 mil difference tolerance in the thickness of them, you might be taking 5 mil off, and that 5 mil is going to dust.
Yeah.
And then if there's bit of chunks of flint in there, you've got to sand through that flint as well.
Yeah. All right.
So it's not difficult to lay them flat. Yeah. Thought, you know, it's not like you just press it down.
Easier until it's, to sand. It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we thought, oh, we're going to sand it anyway. But we didn't think about the flint.
Nice. Mm. More earth floor options.
Yeah.
What's like exciting you in the world of natural building at the minute?
Well, I want to try earth floors for myself.
Yep.
Probably not brave enough just yet.
You could do it.
I don't know. I think the exciting thing in the minute, there's courses happening more. I don't know if I just missed a load, but there seem to be loads of courses when I first started, especially at Lilly, lowimpactlivinginitiative.org, there was loads of courses, wasn't there? Everyone went on a course, and I was going on loads of courses. And then there was like a whole period where there wasn't, I don't know if I just missed it, but there didn't seem to be that many courses on, you know, Lilly stopped doing as many, or they became advertisers for courses rather than running courses. And now there's courses again. And they're international and they're all over the place. And so that's quite cool. And linking up with people from around the world is quite exciting. I don't know why I hadn't done that before, but that seems to be happening now more. And there's just loads of brilliant new people coming in as well.
Yeah.
Like whether they're young or just older and started doing it, you know, and they're getting really good really quickly.
Yeah.
It's like Simon and Becky. And
I mean, Becky's, what she's doing is
ridiculous.
It's mad.
She came to me for a little bit on the job where we were plastering over these earth blocks, actually, in Oxfordshire, as a, what do you call it? That thing?
Oh, the Prince's Foundation.
Prince's Foundation person working, and placement, whatever you call it. And then, obviously, keep in touch. Hello, hello, hello. Comes to work for me a couple of years later, maybe not even that. And it's like shit hot at everything. She was really good. She came to work at Wigginton with me and doing all the... We were doing like repairs and stuff at the end. And I was
that the black plaster?
Oh, she did the black plaster for me,
stunning.
And it was just like, oh my God, you've only been doing this for a little bit and you're amazing. And the same with Simon, who came at the same time as Becky. And
he's been doing floors with me as well.
So. And there's loads of other people, you know, I don't know... so I don't know why, like when I first started doing it, maybe there was just way less people. It wasn't known about. Now Prince's Foundation and stuff that eBucky's doing and eBucky.co maybe or .org, can't remember.
.co.
So that's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that is exciting. Sort of feels, don't know, feels positive, doesn't it?
Yeah. And there's like way more people, like I say, there's way more people who know about it. And and like when I first started doing hempcrete builds, you tried to get clay plaster and the people just, that was just way too far out. And now you get people ringing up, I want some hempcrete and I want a price for clay plaster while you're at it. You don't have to sell it anymore.
Yeah. What's happening with your clay plaster?
Oh man, I'm so rubbish.
Last I heard, you were just waiting for a logo to put on the bag.
Yeah, so the logo's done.
Right. So what's the excuse now?
So the excuse now is you have to put a phone number on the bag, right?
Right.
And I just need a phone number.
Just put your
phone. This sounds so ridiculous.
Just buy a phone.
Yeah, so that's what I'm going to do. That's what I've been doing for the last 6 months. How long is it going to take me to buy a phone? I know.
I know it's difficult because you've got loads of things going on and it's like...
Well, everybody does, doesn't it? Yeah. But I'm just rubbish at anything to do with that's not building, I suppose, or everyday life.
Well, yes, there's a reason you're a builder.
Yeah.
Because you like building and it's the thing that...
But the, so they're really... So I'm really close. I'm already selling the plaster to people.
Yeah.
I just haven't got the logo on the bag and the website on go. And so it's close. So the setup is I've made all the plasters. I've designed the plasters. I've got the recipe. I've been using them for quite a while to make sure they're fine. I'm not a perfectionist, but I'm not going for perfection. I'm going for like a good plaster that is cost effective and does what it says it's going to do and is easy to use. So perfection in the sense that's my brief.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've used it a lot. I've had several other building companies use it who have used earth plasters and say they really like it. So lots of positives in that sense. And then the setup is that I couldn't keep making it here at my place because it's getting too demanding.
Mm-hmm.
So Cornish Lime make it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that for other people as well, make other people's things. And they stock it, and then I sell it out of there, which is great for me because I don't have to make it anymore. And they can put it
and store it.
And store it. Mm. And they're already doing that with other stuff anyway, so they can do it way cheaper than I can. So it keeps the price of the product down.
Yeah.
And they've obviously got all that experience and equipment of making things.
Yeah.
And then the idea is that obviously sell it and then looking at 50% of the profits going towards Ibuki, which is Earth Building UK and Ireland charity. But it might be the way that it will work is 50% of the profits go to an earth building fund, which can then fund Ibuki and other earth building things.
Mm.
So, you know, it's early days. The idea came about was to fund Ibuki's core funding, which is like everyday stuff, which you can't go and get funding for, like the bookkeeper and the website and things like that. So it's to get some money coming in for that. And then I just thought, actually, this could be quite good. I was thinking, well, if I've got a fund, then, you know, what if in 10 years' time it was selling loads of plaster and people who had an earth house that they wanted to renovate but didn't have the money to do it properly could, you know, there could be money allocated for that. And
yeah. So very, that's, is it altruistic? Is that the word?
I don't know.
Very sort of giving of you.
Yeah, but
you're not just wanting to make loads of money from selling this thing.
Well,
it's a positive
nice
thing.
Yeah, it'd be nice. I mean, I think I make enough money from building. I don't do badly. So
you're not getting any younger.
Yeah, no, I'm not. But if you think about it, it's 50% of profit.
Yeah.
So you're getting whatever happens, I'm getting profit. I'm only giving away if I'm getting. So it's kind of...
Also, it's probably a very shrewd business move because if it supports the earth building community, then the earth building community are going to promote the hell out.
Exactly.
It's actually genius. Well, I thought you were an idiot. But no.
Well, also, if you're putting money back into that industry, Ibuki basically teach people how to do earth building.
Mm.
Oh, there's 100 more earth builders to buy your earth plaster.
Yeah.
Like, so it is, I'm not a business person in the slightest, as you can see by my websites and stuff, but it kind of makes sense that if you give money to the industry you're in, your industry is going to get bigger.
Especially a growing, burgeoning industry.
Yeah.
Like this.
And it's kind of cool. I mean, I got the idea from the toilet paper, Who Gives a Crap, which we get, and they give 50% of their profit to making toilets around the world and places that don't have as many toilets and all that. And I just thought, what a great idea, because you're giving, and I felt great buying it. I pay a little bit more for it probably, but it turns up on your door in a massive box, so you don't have to worry about it. And in the pandemic, I was laughing, because not... Obviously, some people weren't, but I had loads of toilet paper because my box turned up with all my toilet paper. Anyway, I just thought, what a brilliant thing.
Mm, model.
It makes you happier to buy it because you know that some of the money's going back in. And like I said, like you're only giving away money that you're getting. You're getting 50% profit anyway, so you're only giving away the profit, and it's just not being so greedy, isn't it?
That's great. And you said you're sort of aiming it to be quite competitively priced.
Yeah, so it's £15.60 a bag.
How far does a bag go?
Retail price. Bag is 25 kilograms. It's a plastic bag. Sorry, but you can use it as a rubble sack afterwards.
Right.
But the materials aren't dried. So when you put lime plaster in a bag... Obviously, the lime's dry, but you have to dry the sand because otherwise the lime will set. Obviously, I'm talking about hydraulic lime here.
Yeah.
But with the clay, you don't. You just put the sand, just goes in damp. It's not. There's no energy being put into drying the sand.
Mm-hmm.
The clay is obviously dry because it's dry anyway when you buy it from the quarry.
And fiber?
Huh?
Is there fiber in there?
No.
You're adding fiber.
Yeah, so
separately.
Yeah, so the top coat doesn't need fibre.
Mm-hmm.
Done loads of testing, and it just doesn't need it. And that kind of came out of a conversation with James Henderson when I was asking him about fibres, and he was saying, "Well, just try it without. If you've got a good base coat, your base coat is doing all your stopping the moving of the wall or whatever. It's covering the board joints.
Yeah.
Your base coat is creating something that you should just be able to plaster onto without the fibre. So, but you could put it in. And then the base coat doesn't have fibre in, so that you can either use a render mesh of Hessian or Jute Scrim or put straw in. Because I kind of thought, if I do it like that, then you can put render mesh in if that's what you use. Or yeah, you can put straw in. Well, because you're going to have to mix it up anyway.
Mm.
What
does a bag of, say, gypsum cost?
I don't know.
I've never bought a bag of gypsum. Is it like comparable material costs?
Oh, no, it's probably... It's, I could Google it, but it's probably twice the amount as gypsum.
Okay.
But it's similar to a bag. It's less than a bag... Well, it depends what lime you're looking at, but it's less than some bagged limes.
Yeah.
Some are like 19, 20 quid a bag, if you're talking about pre-mixed, and it's probably more or similar to a bag of pre-mixed lime putty plaster, same. But you probably get more in my bag clay because it's drier than the putty.
Yeah.
So a 25 kilogram bag would give you, like, depending on how thick you're doing your base coat, a square metre to a square metre and a half. Depending on how thick you do your top coat, it's like 3 to 4 square metres for £15.60.
That's great. That's brilliant.
We
should have a whip round and get you a phone number.
Yeah. You know what I was doing just before you turned up was just getting a... Because there's so many ways you can do your phone number, though. And you have to put... Obviously, on the bag, there's going to be the website, and you can get in contact with me through that. If it ever goes massive, there'll be other people you can get through to on the phone. But on the bag, you have to have a phone number. I think it's a legal thing. But whoever looks at the number on the bag... And I haven't got a business address. I thought I had a landline here, so I was going to put my... I almost... This is how bad I am at this kind of thing. I gave them my landline number to put on the bag, so that was it. It was all done.
Yeah.
And just before it was going to go to print, because you've got to buy like 5,000 or 10,000 of these bags, I was like, I better just check we do still have a landline. Turns out we don't. So we don't. So it's just internet now. The landline number we had doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
I don't know if we changed that or they just took it away. I can't remember.
Yeah.
So then I was like, well, do I get a landline just for that? But then if I move, and then you can get these virtual offices where there's somebody who's... And I was like, well, that's it. You've got to pay quite a lot for it. And it's rubbish. And who rings a number on the bag anyway when you can get through to the website and...
Could you just get a mobile phone and then it always goes to answer phone?
That's what I'm doing.
And the answer phone says, no one listens to voicemails. Send an email.
Yeah. And it basically tells you where to go for all the frequently asked questions. And so it could take you through to the website, which will have up-to-date information and a phone number to get through to me.
Yeah.
Or if it's gone massive, whoever else is working there. Yeah.
And that's a thing that can be pointed in different directions. Because you can forward phone numbers, can't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
that's where it'll go. I've got to go and get what they
call it. It seems awfully simple, Will.
Well, it's simple. It's the decision bit is the not simple bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the same in building when you're deciding what do I put on the wall. It might take you 4 weeks to decide, but it'd take you a day to put it on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that goes to the guy. He's going to print the bags. The website is being... I've been working on it already, but it's all going to be simple because... It's going to be sold mainly through distributors.
Yeah.
Because I'm really bad at answering the phone.
No, but that's good because if people go to, you know, Cornish Lime website or whoever, other building suppliers.
Yeah, well, there'll be Hemp Block Company will be selling it, Kind Construction, Kind Supply.
Yeah.
Cornish Lime Eco Merchant.
Great.
Want to... there might be others. And obviously I'll go to the others and see if they want to sell it as well.
Yeah.
And then it's just a really simple plaster. And they used it at H.G. Matthews at the Materials Cultures course.
Mm.
I did a hempcrete course there. And then they've just done a clay plaster on with Fionn.
Yeah.
Teaching it, chalk plaster, on Instagram she is. And I got some really positive feedback from quite a few people about it, so that was really good. And when I did a clay plastering course at H.G. Matthews, I had like 25 people. Siggy Coker was teaching it, and we had 25 different people, beginners to like experts, all using it.
Mm.
plastered over. On one of the days, we just used my standard top coat, which was over the standard base coat, and they all used it and nothing cracked. And really? You've got like beginners putting it on thick, you've got people used to gypsum putting it on super thin, you know, all sorts of stuff was being done with it, and nothing cracked. And I was just walking around afterwards in this room with all this plaster, just going, oh my God, this is really good. Like, I think I can start selling it now.
Yeah! That was only a year ago.
Yeah. Hey, it takes you a long time to get a mobile phone with a number.
Yeah. I know what you mean, though, about decisions. And it is, especially if you've got other things you're thinking about. It's like, you can't. I sort of need sometimes that like driving time just to free my mind up and let my brain like actually turn some things over. Maybe that's one problem with not working far away anymore.
You make up to go on a drive.
Yeah.
Walk the dog.
Yeah.
That by the way, it's gone dark now, but that's the standard top coat down the end there.
Yes, it's an absolute beauty.
It's like a, I don't know what colour to call it, because I was calling it straw white, because it is kind of yellowy, kind of white, kind of ochre-y, beigey.
It sounds like a decision that could delay the project.
Yeah, but I'm not even going to call it colour, because it's something you can, obviously there'll be a thing showing the colour, but you can either, you don't have, you can paint, the idea is you paint over it as well. You don't have to have it just that colour. You know, you can either make 30 different coloured clay plasters, or you can say, do you know what, it's way cheaper if I make one colour and you paint it if you don't like it.
Yep. I think that's great.
I do. I have done recently a white one, though, that's going to be probably a standard, because so many people asked for white. And you're just like, oh, really? Like, okay. But I suppose if you don't know what you want, white's an easy one, then you can paint it.
Yeah, it's neutral, isn't it?
And the base coat actually is white, bright white.
Yeah.
Basically, the base coat's in the bathroom, actually, on the wall. This is one of the buildings I tested it in.
Well, yeah. I mean, you never replied to my message, but I want alone.
Yeah, don't WhatsApp though. I don't have my notifications turned on WhatsApp. Otherwise, your phone pings all the time. And then when I do see a ping, it's like, oh no, they asked for loads of plaster on WhatsApp.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Nice one, Will. Always great to catch up with him. I can't wait to catch up with him at Clayfest. Just time to say, share this podcast if you can. Become a patron for less than the cost of buying me a cup of coffee. Help support the podcast. Make sure you check out the show notes. See all the links to the stuff we've talked about, as well as to Clayfest. And the spoon carving courses I am running at Nettlecombe Craft School. That is all. I hope you're doing well. Until next time, see you soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.